Literally minutes ago from the White House, President Trump made an announcement that he thinks things are going in a good direction with the Iran war and negotiations. Maybe we won't have to get to that fifth day when the ultimatum comes to an end. And in one sense, it was kind of Christmas today. Apparently, Iran gave President Trump a gift. And if you think that sounds weird, then this is just another day in the life of America in 2026. Let's start. Let's get right into it. Here's what President Trump, first of all, said that, oddly enough, he says, you know, I think we've actually succeeded. We got regime change.
We have really regime change. You know, this is a change in the regime because the leaders are all very different than the ones that we started off with that created all those problems. So this was, I think we can say, Jason, this is regime change, right? Why do you say, what makes you trust? Do you think I trust them? I don't trust them.
Well, then why bother talking to them?
Because they're going to make a deal. They're going to make a deal.
We've had regimes. Okay, that we need a little definition work here for President Trump, because a lot of people were saying before this war started that one of the objectives of the United States needed to be regime change. Never forget, we were showing Jack Keane, who was emphatically saying, we don't want negotiations. Remember, this is in January. We don't want negotiations in February. Don't negotiate. Lindsey Graham, don't negotiate, because if you negotiate and you have an end where that government stays in power, then it's a loss for our side, because they'll only wait. So he said, they'll only wait until later on they'll come back at us again. Never mind the fact that they never came after us in the first place. They only retaliated against our attacks, and they never attacked us from scratch before, always in response. But forget that for the moment. Nevertheless, they said, don't have a negotiated settlement. We only want a war, and we want to destroy the regime. Well, that obviously meant that you would change the regime, i.e. regime change, which means that you put in place something else, like with Saddam Hussein, like with Muammar Gaddafi. That's what a regime change is, when you get rid of it. What happened in Maduro in Venezuela, that was not regime change. All you did was exchange the leader, but the regime itself stayed in place. Now then you have, yes, you've assassinated the leader, but the regime itself and the government is still fully in place. So no, Mr. President, I'm sorry, you have not had regime change. You had leader change by dint of execution or assassination, as we may want to call it. Any more than we had regime change in the United States after Joe Biden left office and you assumed office. I mean, I guess using that same definition, we've had regime change. Well, obviously it didn't, because the government stayed the same. You just changed the person at the top of it. So what it sounds like is President Trump is trying to find some way to, I don't even know, rationalize isn't the right word, justify probably isn't either, to try to make it sound like he's really accomplished something. That, and who knows, maybe he's trying to say this in order to get some of his critics to say, okay, well, he can end this war now and he can negotiate something away. And he got regime change. He succeeded, because he said so many times, to include yesterday, we showed you some of the sound bites when he was out in front of Air Force One, where he says, you know, we killed the first layer, we killed the second layer, and we don't even know for sure who's in charge now and all this. And so now he wants to say, well, that was regime change. So maybe that means he's thinking, okay, now we can bring this war to an end because we accomplished our objectives. Well, of course, that's absurd, because the objective set was no potential for nuclear weapons, meaning you're going to get rid of their entire nuclear program, to include all of the enriched uranium, the 400 some odd kilograms of 60% enriched uranium. You said you're going to destroy their Navy, you're going to destroy their Air Force, and you're going to destroy their missile, long-range missile programs. That's what you set out at the beginning. Well, you certainly assassinated the leader, but that's not regime change. You haven't changed the government. The government is still fully in place. The president is Pezeshkian, is still the president. Foreign Minister Araghchi is still the foreign minister. So two of the key players there, but the system itself is literally unchanged. Nothing has changed whatsoever in the government. So you haven't changed the regime at all. All you've done is change a few people there. They still are showing that they have complete capability to launch missiles right now. They're not as frequent as they were at the beginning, but they are now at some corner of a sustained rate, where they were able to fire missiles every day. Every single day they can fire missiles and drones. You haven't stopped that, to include this day. There's already been missiles in Tel Aviv. The last day and a half or so, there was big strikes in Dimona and Arad. We've shown you pictures of that earlier today. So Iran is still very viable militarily. The Gulf of the Strait of Hormuz is still closed. Only the ships with oil that Iran allows to go through are going through. So that means that they are making more money because we, to try to keep enough oil going through there, we have incentivized Iran by saying, hey, how about we take some of the sanctions off of you so you can send even more oil out there? And even though Scott Bessent wants to, you know, have a little hee-hee-hee moment and pretend like he's out jujitsuing Iran, everyone is aware of the reality that they are selling more oil now by count about 400,000 barrels a day more at a substantially higher rate than they had before. So while you're certainly causing tremendous damage, you're also giving them flush with much more cash than they were before we started this war. So any way you want to look at it, and of course you can add Russia to the list. We have taken sanctions off of them for a period of time, allowing them to sell more oil at a higher rate. Ergo, they're making more money too. So that doesn't seem to be fixed. And this claim that you've destroyed their Navy, you've blown up a bunch of boats that were on the surface that were frankly part of their old Navy that they didn't use much. Most of them were at ports in the anchor. They weren't out patrolling. Hundreds of the boats that matter to the Iranian Navy have not been touched because they're in underground caverns in places where they can actually roll in and out of the ocean from the side of rock. You haven't even hit any of those. We've shown you some of the drone boats that they have that are underground, and they won't be brought out until they're ready to be used, meaning they still have the viability. You haven't destroyed it. And of course, obviously their long-range missile program remains fully intact, as they demonstrate on a nightly basis, on a daily basis, and the IRGC is still fully viable. So none of this objectives that we said at the beginning have been met. The only thing is, has cost us a lot, because there are 13 Americans dead that should never have been dead. There are, I think the last count I saw, the official count was 240 Americans wounded to one degree or another. That number keeps ballooning up. Our bases have been destroyed. $1 billion radar system and hundreds of millions of dollars in other radar systems and other facilities have been destroyed in the region. So it has cost us a tremendous amount. Now that we're having to have a $200 billion supplemental to try and pay, who knows how long this is going to go. It's costing somewhere around $2 billion per day. And we're dwindling down on all the our interceptor missiles, the PAC-3s, the THAAD systems. Now the JASMs, we're starting to get into that too. There's an end date to this. We just don't have an unlimited amount of missiles, and we don't have the defense industrial base to continue up. Ergo, right now, forget about the spreadsheet that shows who's got the balance of power. Right now, the balance of leverage is with the Iranian side. We can still inflict a lot of damage and kill a lot of people, and we do that on a regular basis. 9,000 strikes as of the 23rd, according to CENTCOM, 9,000 strikes have been leveled on Iran. So obviously, they're all hitting something. So that's a tremendous amount of damage and firepower and losses on the Iranian side. But it is a country 4 times bigger than Iraq, 93 million people. Never forget that. And the most important thing is the Strait of Hormuz continues to be closed. And when Trump says that, you know, I'm not going to, you know, he was asked, well, do you trust them to make a deal, something that they'll live up to? And he says, well, why should I trust them? Well, you have to have a level of trust if you want to reach a deal. The better question is, why would they trust us? Seriously, take your hubris off and your nationality, whatever, and just look at this objectively and honestly, because that's the only way you can. If you just look at it with the lens of what I want to be the case, then you're going to miss something, and you're going to help. You're going to be part of the problem that we have is why we're in this trouble. We have to look at it objectively. Why should they trust us when we lied to them about 2025, when we said we were in negotiations, but we just used it as cover to attack? And then we did the same thing this time, after the third round, where they offered us basically the moon, and we said, yeah, we don't want that. We went to war with them anyway, even though they were literally willing to do the other thing. And now here we are again in a situation where we say we want to negotiations, but evidence is starting to pile up that we're just getting ready for military operations. We have actually today, just before we came on here, I saw this here. This is about an hour ago. is that orders have been given out that the 82nd Airborne Division will deploy to the Middle East. President Trump's Department of War is keeping the operation full steam ahead, maximum leverage over the regime. This is, of course, Eric Daugherty, who's a huge supporter of President Trump and always characterizes everything in the most glowing terms necessary. And then you have to say, okay, well, what would they do? Because now that means you're going to have at least one ready brigade when you look into the details. It's not the entire division. It's the immediate ready brigade. So it's about 3,000 or so soldiers in there. You've also got about 5,000 total Marines and two separate Marine expeditionary units. The 31st and the 11th MEU are steaming to the Gulf. The USS Tripoli and its battle group is nearly there right now. Apparently by Friday, they will be operational and ready to go. Well, then the question is going to be towards what end, because we already know there's Army Special Forces on the ground there. There's now the 82nd headed that way. There's a bunch of Marines. What are they going to do? And there's a few operations or a few options here. Is number one, you can go after Karg Island. You can see that's up in the northern part of the Persian Gulf there, that little red dot you can see. Then there's some other options inside the horseshoe of the Strait of Hormuz. You see those in also in red dots. There's a number of islands which could be spots where the U.S. could try and have an interdiction. They could try something further inland to try and seize some locations behind the strait, maybe to put pressure on them from that direction. And you can see in the upper left-hand corner of a third option might be to try to fly in and take some kind of target on the ground in Tehran. That's what those green dots that are thatched there in the middle of that area, just south of the sea there in the top. You see some helicopter paths going in there. Or they could try to go into somewhere where they think maybe some of the nuclear material, this 400-some-odd kilograms of nuclear reprocessed material is said to be located. Those are all bad options. Let me just tell you, again, I hate to beat a dead horse, but it's critical to understand. You're talking at most 3,000 Army soldiers, maybe a few hundred special forces, and maybe 5,000 total Marines. And it's really not even that. That's not the deployment, because a lot of those are operating the ships and they're not going anywhere. So in terms of deployment, I think it's like 2,200 Marines. So about 4,400 roughly total Marines that are combat capable. And three, so maybe 7,000 total deployable forces, somewhere around there. There are a 500,000 in the Iranian armed forces. When you're talking about the besieged, the IRGC, and the regular army, and then of course there's police and other paramilitary groups are out there providing security. Wherever that material is, you can certainly imagine that they're going to have maximum security on that. That it's going to be in a location that's very difficult physically to get to, that probably has multiple layers underneath the ground. There's no question that it's, it would be absurd to think anything else, that it's going to be buried underground, that it's going to be defended by multiple layers, and it would be an incredibly difficult task if you found it, if you're able to find it, and if the Iranians were foolish enough to put it all in one place. I doubt that they would do that. And if they're not aware of how that we're monitoring their channels and their networks, and they have given us misinformation, you know, under the guise of they're trying to be secret, and then we intercepted some traffic, who knows, we could be going into an absolute ambush. I've heard a number of people talk about that as well. There is some rumors and there is some words coming from those who have access to troops that are deployed downrange, and they say this is going to happen sometime this weekend. I have no way to independently confirm that, but that is a great concern. And based on all of these movements, one would think that's the way. Again, back to President Trump's comment, how can you trust Iran? If that's the case, then why would Iran ever trust us? And especially when you're talking about not even a month into this war so far. Well, that's not the only thing that President Trump was talking about. He was also talking about some issues about how strong we are militarily.
And I hate to say that they're defenseless because, you know, until that last missile is fired, they have little power. But we are in about the best bargaining position. We're way ahead of schedule. And again, they have no Navy and they have no Air Force and they have no missile protection. And most of their missiles are gone. Most of their launches we've killed. You know, we've killed about 82% of their launches. So even if they had a missile, they can't launch it.
I don't know where all these specific detailed numbers keep coming from that we say we've had all their launchers. The only way you can have that kind of fidelity is if you have a spreadsheet that has list every single launcher that they have. So you have accurate knowledge of how many launchers they have, and then you have accurate information for how many have been destroyed, and then you can just do the math and say that leaves this percentage-wise. Otherwise, it's a literal guess. And since all those videos Gary showed you since this war started about just these cavernous underground facilities, nobody has any idea exactly how many they have to be able to say that they've taken out any certain number. And as we've shown you also, they have now a very clever way to bypass a lot of this, that they will fire missiles seemingly out of sand. No one even knows where the launch points are. They don't need launchers for that. They don't have to have, they don't bring them out. They don't bring them out of the tunnels, which sometimes they do. Then, of course, they have the ability to repair the damage. If we find the tunnels and we bring, say, a cruise missile on top of that, that can really cause a lot of damage, but they've shown that they can clear the damage and bring other launchers back in there. They'll fire and they'll get back in. And it's a cat and mouse game to see who can be the fastest. Can they bring that missile carrier out there, launch something, get it set up, launch, and then get it stowed back, and then get back into the protection of their missile, of their underground facility before we can bring a missile back on them. It's a country four times the size of Iraq. This is not like it's not like Israel where you can just loiter over it right there, and it's this really postage stamp size country. And as soon as you see something, you've got plenty of assets there. You've got this whole country, and you believe me, they're spread to the four winds of this country. That's why they have decentralized operations, 31 military districts spread throughout, so that you can't just loiter over one. And of course, we've seen that we've lost a number of MQ-9 Reaper drones. We've lost several aircraft. We always claim it's an accident or our friendly fire. We'll see. I think we've only admitted one F-35 was hit by enemy fire. But nevertheless, we don't have free reign over. So it's going to be a difficult task. But we've seen whatever that number is, however many that has been hit, they have continued to maintain fire every single day. So why do you want to say that, yeah, we've knocked them out and they just have a couple left? I mean, that briefs well, and that for your followers, I guess that's good. But if that doesn't match reality, they know the reality. You got to understand that. The Israelis know the reality because they're catching most of these in the teeth. So they're the ones that are getting hit in Dimona, in Arad, in Tel Aviv today. So they're not fooled if anybody else is. But the question is, the most important thing is, why would Iran trust us? And then why is Iran going to make some kind of a deal when they still have this capacity and they still control the Gulf of Hormuz and they know that ticking clock of the price of a barrel of oil, especially after Friday, one way or the other, is going to go up? Either President Trump is going to attack them, like he said, he's going to try something on the ground, and then they're going to respond the way that they have said, or I don't know what they would do if it's a ground incursion as opposed to hitting their energy sources. Maybe they would have a different reaction, but there will be one. You can be sure of that, and that probably will make the price of oil go back up. And if you don't have the power to bring them to heel, then it's not going to matter. Well, President Trump said one other thing in terms of this negotiation. This was the strange part. I don't know if this is a flashback to December, if it's kind of Santa Claus came while we weren't looking, but there was something about a gift.
They did something yesterday that was amazing, actually. They gave us a present. And the president arrived today, and it was a very big present worth a tremendous amount of money. And I'm not going to tell you what that present is, but it was a very significant prize to give it. So that meant one thing to me: we're dealing with the right people.
Was that nuclear related?
No, it wasn't nuclear related. It was oil and gas related, and it was a very nice thing they did. But what it showed me is that we're dealing with the right people.
A present which arrived today. So apparently it wasn't, I guess, a willingness to do anything. It arrived, implying that it's a thing, but it's related to oil and gas, not related to the nuclear program. And if President Trump set all these objectives, I mean, how are you going to walk away from something if the regime is still in control, the government still exists as it did before, that they still have long-range missiles that you clearly haven't destroyed them all, and they still retain them at the end, that their Navy, which has been protected underground, is still in existence there. And if they still have the assets that they have in the middle, Sorry about that. I'm in new digs here. I saw that. The joys of being alive on the air. The issue is that none of the things that you've said were terms have been met. So whatever gift they may have given you, when you say it means that you're dealing with the right people, it probably says that the people you're dealing with know you, because President Trump has always really responded well to gifts. I mean, you have the FIFA gift prize, you have the peace prize that Machado gave him that he didn't earn, but they made this big presentation with him every time he turned a golden crown from South Korea. Everybody loves to give Trump gifts, and he loves to get them. And everybody recognizes that, because that's a way into his heart. That's a way to ingratiate yourself to him. And it seems that the Iranians are aware of that. I've been looking on a line, and you know, he literally made these comments moments ago. So far, I haven't seen anybody even speculate what this gift was. He didn't admit it there, but it's something that made him really happy. But the question is that really going to matter? Is it going to matter whatever he gave him, whatever kind of gift he had? Because I showed you 82nd Airborne is there. One Marine Expeditionary Unit is there. There's another one on the way. There's Army Special Forces on the ground. And, of course, all our air and naval power continues to do its dirty work. As, in fact, during that same speech or during that same press conference, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth wanted to put his negotiating two cents on the table, too.
We see ourselves as part of this negotiation as well. We negotiate with bombs. You have a choice as we loiter over the top of Tehran, as the president talked about your future. The president has made it clear that you will not have a nuclear weapon. The War Department agrees. Our job is to ensure that. And so we're keeping our hand on that throttle as long as hard as is necessary to ensure the interests of the United States of America are achieved on that battlefield.
So we are hovering over the battlefield. We are pushing the throttle. I mean, he's very demonstrative. He's really good on TV. I mean, you got to give the man that. But negotiating with bombs, I guess that's one way to look at it, because that is the American way. It seems that we don't actually negotiate with diplomats. That's why we sent Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff in to talk to the Iranians. And that's why we haven't even seen Hayden O'Hara, the alleged top diplomat, the Secretary of State. He's like AWOL from this. And instead we're talking about the Secretary of War, who loves to talk about killing people, loves to talk about blowing stuff up. And now he just openly says, we negotiate with bombs. So what that means, let's make sure that everybody's crystal clear on this. If you're an Iranian, that means do what we say or we'll kill you. Is that really negotiation? I mean, is that really something you can trust or so? I mean, we're already bombing them. So where's the advantage to doing more of that? Thinking that, well, now then we're going to really put more bombs on you and then you're going to capitulate. Listen, there have been, according to CENTCOM, 9,000 strikes against Iran since this thing started. That is a tremendous amount of firepower. I don't know how much bomb and tonnage that is, but it's a lot. And that means that there's a lot of Iranians who have been killed, a lot more who have been wounded, a lot of facilities that have been destroyed, a lot of military assets that have been destroyed, energy assets, a water desalinization plant in one case has been hit. So all kinds of damage has been done. And the longer this goes, the more damage is going to be done. But I keep telling you, it is critically important to get this. The Iranian side understood what they were getting into. They knew when war came what it was going to cost. And they have experience at this. It's not theoretical. They have physically done it. They survived for 8 years in a war against Iraq that was supported by the United States. They've already got direct experience at this. And there were scores of people, of leaders, that were assassinated during that time and killed during that. Hundreds of thousands of Iranians were killed. I think over 1 million were wounded. They had a tremendous number of casualties during that war. They never gave up. And so they now have these underground cities, so they have resourced already ahead of time, knowing that bombs were going to come. They put things beyond the capability of the bombs. So they have storage facilities, and that means Navy equipment, that means launchers, that means missiles, that certainly means raw materials to continue to do this. It means manufacturing facilities. All of these things are underground. The storage for the equipment, all of it is underground. So they have the ability to go a long time and still continue to be viable. And remember again, the primary objective for the Iranian side right now is survival. They have to survive as a cohesive, cogent political force, being able to control its country and within its borders. They have to maintain a viability militarily. They've got to be able to defend their borders, and they've got to be able to maintain some kind of steady flow of fire from their drones and from their missiles. If they can do that for a long time, for months, a year, 2 years even, there's claim that they can do a lot. It would be crazy if they didn't. If they didn't have that much capacity already planned, then they would be very foolish. And I haven't seen any evidence that they were foolish, and so far they've been so good. If you think, Secretary Hegseth, that you're going to bomb them into the Stone Age, and that for all these attacks that we've done here on now the 25th day, so closing in on 4 weeks, and you think that's going to cause them to submit and to give into something that's going to mean that they're going to have to give away something that's of core value to them, that's not likely to happen. And if that's what you're banking everything on, then we're going to be in trouble. Because, listen, for the Iranian side, not only do they have to endure the bombing, but they also understand that time is an asset that's more on their side than not. The longer it goes, the more damage they can have, the more people that can be killed. And it will harm their country, and their economy is continue to suffer. There's no question about that. So it's not an automatic, it's not an easy thing for them to survive. It's a gamble and a difficulty for them to endure. But if they're able to endure that, they can go a long time. They can go a long time suffering and under privation. They've done it before. It's in their mentality. It's in their culture. They've done it before. But the question is, they also recognize, well, not the question, but the point is, they also recognize our limits of power, even though we don't. We claim that we'll never run out of ammunition. President Trump publicly says many times, we have an indefinite amount. There's no truth to that at all. The Iranian side is no doubt very aware that we are running low on the standoff weapons, the Tomahawk cruise missiles, JASMs, which have about 400-kilometer range on it that we fire from our aircraft, and air defense missiles, especially the PAC-3 and the THAADs. We were critically low on those already. We cannot, if they're able to maintain any kind of consistency that they've been doing over the last week or so in terms of the volume of fire that we have to try and intercept, we're going to run out at some point, and we're going to have to start going to older stuff like the PAC-2 air defense missiles, which are simply not as effective. And then even the PAC-3s are not that great, but the PAC-2s have even less capability, which means more of the Iranian stuff will get through. They're aware of that. So they know the longer it goes, it's not just a ticking time bomb. I told you about the price of oil. It's also about our own inventories, both the standoff offensive weapons and the PAC-3 defensive and THAAD, especially air defense weapons. So they are, it's in a test of wills. I'm just telling you, this is what it's all about. I doubt very seriously whether we're going to get any kind of a resolution in between now and Friday. It would be illogical and irrational for Iran to give in now, when they've stood all this time and endured all these losses and inflicted the difficulty on the United States of dwindling our capabilities and causing the damage to us that he's caused as well. When now then they could be close to success when they have control of the Strait of Hormuz. As long as they can maintain political viability, and they have it, and keep that control of that Strait of Hormuz, and they have it, then they're in the position, they're in, I won't say the driver's seat, but they're in a position of superiority. They have the stronger position right now. Time is more on their side than it is on our side. Trump desperately wants to get this thing over with, but he has set such high standards for the military objectives he set to be able to claim victory and walk away. And the Iranian side has apparently hardened in their requirements to say, no, we're going to have to get terms we can live with, whether you like it or not, or we're going to keep fighting. So it's a test of wills right now. And I fear that, especially with this announcement of the 82nd Airborne, the 31st MEU arriving on location, special forces apparently being seen in the area, that we're getting ready to do something really stupid, and maybe even do it as soon as this weekend. We'll have to keep a watch on that. But this thing could blow up in our face if we go down the path. But wanted to make sure you're aware of that, because that just happened from the Oval Office here just a short period of time. But like always, you can count on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive to keep you appraised to what's going on and telling you what really matters besides what's being said out loud. Thank you very much, folks. We'll see you tomorrow. on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.
Don't forget to tell your friends, the ones that love to listen to podcasts. Get them to add Daniel Davis Deep Dive to their podcast list. They need to know what you know. They can get it to where they already get their podcast. You just got to tell them.